Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America. We're not going to be taking any calls today because we have with us on the line Antoinette Giancana, who is the daughter of Sam Giancana, who was very well known many, many years ago because of his association with the mafia. And then we have Dr. John Hughes, who's a physician who's done a tremendous job, and together they've written a book called JFK and Sam, The Connection Between the Giancana and Kennedy Assassination. So, with that as a background, Antoinette, are you there?
Yes, I am, Doctor. How are you, Doctor?
I'm doing fine. I'm so glad to have you with us. And Dr. Hughes, are you there?
I am certainly here. Thank you, Stan.
All right, fine. And so, let's just start out talking perhaps a little to Antoinette. Certainly, you were brought up in the family with Sam. Your dad was involved with the mafia. What sort of person was he?
He had a double personality, split personality, I must admit to. On one hand, he was the sweetest, nicest person. He had such sensitivity that he gravitated towards the arts of both in painting and other forms of art. He was generous beyond all means. On the other hand, he had this plotting brain of doing things that should not have been done, but did it primarily because of the life and the times he lived in.
All right. And, of course, this was sort of the code of the mafia, wasn't it?
Yes.
And my understanding is that there's sort of a code of the mafia, loyalty, you know, and certainly there was a certain element of honor associated with the mafia, wasn't there?
There certainly was, Doctor. In fact, I've often said, and I used this term, and it was his term he used constantly, you don't bite the hand that feeds you. And I guess several people through his careers have done so, and you know the results.
All right, fine. Well, of course, the other thing, of course, was his relationship with the Kennedys. And he had actually made a deal with Joe Kennedy that he would help to get John Kennedy, the son, elected the president. But he expected, of course, that the Kennedys would leave the mafia alone. Was that really the case?
Doctor, you know, I think this is the most significant thing for me as far as this book goes, is the relationship between my father and Joe Kennedy. It wasn't long-lived, but he also had a short relationship with him regarding his son being elected president, both here in Chicago and the primaries of West Virginia. And, you know, they became friends for a while, and there was a lot going on between the time of the primaries and everything else in the main election.
All right, you hold that thought. I'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Today we have two guests on the line with us. One is Antoinette Giancana, who is the daughter of Sam Giancana, who back in the 1960s was well known because, of course, he was the head of the mafia, I believe. Was it in Chicago, Antoinette?
Please, we do not use the word mafia Chicago. It's the outfit. I don't know.
The outfit, all right.
The outfit.
Then we have Dr. John Hayes, who's done a great job, and we're going to be talking about their book, JFK and Sam, The Connection Between the Giancana and Kennedy Assassinations, because certainly there was a definite relationship. Sam Giancana was killed. He was murdered very shortly before he was had been subpoenaed to appear before a congressional committee to talk about the relationship between the CIA and the mafia. And certainly, Dr. Hughes, was there a relationship between the CIA and the mafia?
Oh, yes, indeed. the CIA and the Mafia really collaborated a great deal, and particularly in trying to get Castro assassinated. The CIA had been responsible for the assassination of Lumumba in the Congo and Trujillo in the Santo Domingo and Diem in North Vietnam, and also Schneider in Chile. And so there was one more, and that was Castro. There was an attempt to try to get him assassinated, and they called upon Sam Giancana in particular to do that. In addition, of course, to Santos Trafficante and Johnny Roselli. Johnny Roselli was very much under Sam, but spent a lot of time in Las Vegas. Santos Trafficante, of course, was the boss in the Tampa, Florida area. So sure, there was a, a close relationship at first between the CIA and Sam, because they really were actually paying him to try to get Castro assassinated. And Antoinette will tell you that Sam was really quite amused at the fact that this was kind of the other way around, that they weren't trying to extract money from him, but they're actually paying him. So sure, the it may have been a big mistake for CIA to try to get in cahoots with the Mafia, but that's what they thought they should have done in order to get Castro eliminated.
Well, I have something to add to that, Doctor.
Go right ahead.
Sam knew Cuba like the back of his hand. He knew every nook and cranny of all of the hotels, all the casinos, and things like that. And I'm almost sure that he absolutely knew what would be the best time and the place to perform whatever he had to perform.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this afternoon is Antoinette Giancana and Dr. John Hughes. Antoinette Giancana is the daughter of Sam Giancana, who was very, very well known back in the 60s as the leader of the outfit in Chicago. And then, of course, Dr. John Hughes, a physician who has done a great job working with Antoinette to write the book, JFK and Sam, going to the basically the assassination of both men. And, of course, what's so interesting about the assassination of Sam Giancana, which nobody ever likes to talk about, is that he was going to be called before a congressional committee to testify about the relationship between our Central Intelligence Agency, your Central Intelligence Agency, and, of course, the Mafia, and they were not above at all actually imploring the Mafia to carry out their assassinations. Now, Antoinette, did your father ever mention anything at all about his relationship to the Central Intelligence Agency, to you or the family?
Yes, he mentioned it on several occasions. And, you know, we could write books and stuff like that, but the fact of the matter is I lived through all of this. I was part of my father's history, in a way. Sam did laugh occasionally and say, "Oh, God, the government sent us X amount of dollars." And he would chuckle. Well, you know, why should he be paid for whatever? And then, you know, all of this comes out, as we found out, after his assassination and things like that. But, yeah, there was money handed back and forth. In fact, one of my father's friends, Judith Campbell Exner, was involved with this whole thing. So,
all right. Well, let's talk a little bit about certainly your father worked with Joe Kennedy to get Jack Kennedy, President Kennedy, elected, and of course your father was instrumental in rigging one of the primary elections, and then of course delivering Chicago in the final election, so that President Kennedy defeated President Nixon in the election, or at least Richard Nixon, who was running for the presidency in 1960. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, fine. Well, now, of course, then the idea was, of course, that the Kennedys would leave your dad alone and leave the outfit alone, or certainly the gangsters here in this country. That they got him elected, and he was supposed to, respond by doing the honorable thing, and that was payback for services given. When, of course, Bobby Kennedy became Attorney General, they targeted the Mafia. And wasn't your dad pretty furious with him?
Oh, he was just kind of an insane kind of furiousness about Bobby Kennedy raising such high heights. He had a fear of Bobby, and I guess the fear really panned out. Bobby watched his house, or our house, like a hawk and other things. I mean, the things that went on in our house regarding this matter were just unbearable.
But, of course, basically, Bobby Kennedy was watching your father, but wasn't your father watching Bobby Kennedy, who was having an illicit affair with Marilyn Monroe?
Do you know something? Yes and no to that. There was just something recently on CBS, I hate mentioning that, regarding the Marilyn Monroe death, and the nice thing is that they didn't even mention my father's name.
Well,
I think it was on 60 Minutes this past Sunday.
All right, fine. Well, John, Dr. Hughes,
yes.
Did you look into that aspect of it at all?
Which aspect?
The relationship between the fact that Sam Giancana was watching Bobby Kennedy, who apparently was having an illicit affair with Marilyn Monroe.
Clearly, both Kennedy boys, of course, were involved with Marilyn. I've looked into that quite carefully, and I don't know whether or not such speculation should be presented over the phone right now.
All right, well, you
don't. But I will mention it. A new theory is that Marilyn was made pregnant by John Kennedy, allegedly, important adverb, and Bobby was there to try to talk her into an abortion, and she decided that she would not have such, and this caused her to be eliminated. And I think anybody that knows anything about Marilyn and that fateful day when she did die knows perfectly well that it was not a suicide. Absolutely not a suicide.
All right, fine. Well, let's go back to Antoinette. Antoinette, you know, as far as your father was concerned, the way that the Kennedys, of course, were going after him after he had gotten President Kennedy elected, did he express any animosity towards them and any desire to, maybe it was time for payback?
No, he didn't.
You didn't, okay.
No, he did not. There were times when Sam was really very silent. The only time he would open up is when I would ask him questions, and then that led to, oh, you know what, at the house, because I'd ask him very direct questions about things that he was doing.
And if he didn't want to answer him, he wouldn't answer him at all.
That's true, he would not. But you know something, Dad and I were so much alike that I had a sense of what he was feeling and how he was acting. So, you know, I read between the lines of how he felt and his actions.
Well, and I think I was really rather interested that you apparently were almost disowned when you actually had a divorce. In other words, he felt very strongly against divorce?
Yes, he did. And luckily, he didn't sign the will. I really wasn't disinherited.
In other words, he was going to disinherit you because you had a divorce, and yet he was having an affair with a woman named Judith Exner, who was having an affair with Jack Kennedy at the same time. Both your dad and Kennedy were having an affair with the same woman. What was that all about?
You know, and then we've got to add another one into there, Phyllis McGuire, too. I mean, you've got to bring her into there with all of these affairs. Again, Sam had the split personality. And what can I say about his affairs?
I mean, here's a man who would threaten to disown his daughter for you know, because she got divorced. That was you.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, of course, he was having an affair with the same woman that the President of the United States was having an affair with. And Dr. Hughes, in the book, you talk about how Judith Exner would say how, you know, Sam would go into a room and he'd call up the President and have long conversations with him. What was that about?
Well, there was a close relationship. I do want to point out how that all began, though, Stan, and that was Frank Sinatra's job for John Kennedy was to find attractive women, and Judith Campbell, that was her married name, was a product of a very fine home, an architect from California, and it was too bad that she got mixed up in this whole business, but she started to be the girlfriend of John Kennedy, and then because Sam Giancana and Kennedy had met so often, and Judith was very much a go-between, particularly in arranging for exchange of money for the 1960 election. Of course, Sam Giancana got to know her quite well, and it wasn't too much that they were having an affair at the very same time. It was that J. Edgar Hoover found out about this and had this famous lunch with J. John Kennedy, in which he said, "Look, I know what you're doing, and I'm going to maybe expose you if you're not careful." And so at that moment, John Kennedy decided to have nothing more with Judith Campbell, but Sam decided to pick up on relationships with her and did so. So it was kind of the end of the affair with John Kennedy, and then the beginning of the affair with Sam. I do want to point out one other thing that I think speaks well of Sam, and that is, as you know, I point out in the book that Judith was made pregnant allegedly by John Kennedy, and then a call came to Sam, Gianconda here in Chicago, that please arrange for an abortion. It did occur at Grant Hospital. And the thing that I want to mention is that Sam felt so badly about this that he offered to marry Judith Campbell, and she refused it because she knew that Sam really was in love with Phyllis McGuire. But I think it's very nice to know that Sam tried to do the right thing, even though he was not the so-called father.
All right, great. But of course, as you've gone into the background of the murder of the American of an American president, certainly there's a great deal to suggest that at least Sam Giancana knew about this, and that a number of members of the so-called mafia were involved in this, including Jimmy Pyles, who is, of course, imprisoned at the present time, and everything is done to keep his story from coming out, because they can't let the American people know that the Warren Commission was a fraud. So do you want to get at all into the mafia's involvement, and who are they really working for? Because you have, the book is fascinating, because you have talked about so many people we've actually interviewed. Colonel Fletcher Prouty, then, of course, there Madeline Duncan Brown, who was had written, who was actually Lyndon Johnson's mistress, and she tells the story about the meeting the evening before the assassination, where this whole thing is planned. So you want to go into that?
Oh, the whole thing was planned out, and there were many forces that did plan it. The CIA was important. The military-industrial complex that we're preparing, of course, for the Vietnam War, very important. J. Edgar Hoover. We have in our book the nomination of J. Edgar Hoover for the guy that may well have coordinated the whole thing. Again, CIA, FBI, military-industrial complex. And then, of course, the mobs were the mob or the mafia was the mechanic. So the organization were the latter groups of people that all had their very good reason to be upset with John Kennedy. And then the shooters pretty much were members of the three big areas, namely Chicago area with Sam Giancana, Santa Strafa County, Florida, and Carlos Marcello down in New Orleans. And they each sent two or three shooters.
Well, now, what about, of course, anybody, do you think there was anybody that came from RCA? There's been a lot of talk about the Corsican Mafia being involved as well. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I have seen those programs, and I know that there was a guy that's supposedly named Santee that was in the grassy knoll, and I cannot tell you that he wasn't. I just know, and I'm 100% definite about this, I have studied Jimmy Files for 10 years. I know he was there, and I know that he shot the most important shot that, of course, nearly removed the right hemisphere of John Kennedy. And I just do have some questions about the Marseille connection.
All right, fine. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Antoinette Giancana, and then, of course, Dr. John Hughes. And they've written a fascinating book about the relationship between Sam Giancana and President Kennedy, and both of them were assassinated. Now, you were, Antoinette, were you at home the night that your father was murdered?
No, what had happened is my children and I were in the Wisconsin Dells, and you know, I had a premonition of my father's death that day. I was sitting on the bench at the Waxed Museum, and normally if they have more dead people, you know, the Waxed Museums, than live people, and then one of the heads all of a sudden turned into my father's. I saw my father's head, so help me, whatever. And, you know, I says, oh God, the only time this happens is when somebody dies. Now, we're going back many years.
All right, fine.
Well, I no sooner get home, and at 2 o'clock in the morning, I get a phone call from my former husband telling me that my father is dead. I said, did cancer get him? Because he was ailing. He was a very sick man from gallbladder surgery. And he said, no, he was shot. So I says, do you want me to come to the house? He says, no, because I lived in St. Charles, which was 40 miles away from my father's house. So, you know, I just knew something funny was going on.
Well, of course, there was a lot of talk, you know. Certainly, people were still, this was, what, about 1975 this happened?
My father's murder, well, yes.
And, of course, you remember, he had been actually subpoenaed to appear before one of the investigating committees of Congress because, you know, of course, they were concerned about the CIA. I think it was probably the Church Committee. They were concerned about the relationship between the CIA and the organization, and some people call it the Mafia, but call it what you will, this criminal syndicate in the United States. There was a fear, however, you know, on the part of people in government that he might actually spill the beans and let the American people know that the Central Intelligence Agency was hiring the Mafia to do hit jobs, and that might even, of course, get back to what had happened, you know, when President Kennedy was killed. So what is your impression of what happened to your father? Obviously, he was assassinated. This was a professional hit, and here was a man who had been involved with with the organization for a long period of time, and I'm sure I had ordered many hits, and that he himself is murdered. Do you think he had any premonition that this was going to happen to him?
I don't think he had a premonition, but let me tell you the strangeness of all of this. Our house, our family house, was guarded by the FBI, the CIA, and the Opark Police Department.
In other words, they were all watching your father.
24/7, Doctor. Actually, 24/7. For many years. I mean, this just wasn't a recent thing because I was living in the house, too, when I had seen some of this going on. Well, all of a sudden, instead of taking individual lunch periods the way they used to or the way they normally did, you know, you go 1 hour, we'll go the other, and so on and so forth, so there would be cover at the house. Well, all three of these cars with two men in it, so that's six men, left the house. All together.
Almost as if somebody had given an order to get out of there so that something's going to happen and we don't want you there. Is that right?
That's true, Doctor. That's absolutely true.
And I think that, obviously, who can order the FBI and the CIA and the local police to leave? It's got to be somebody with a lot of clout, and we're going to be back here in just a moment with Antoinette Jim. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Antoinette Giancana, the daughter of Sam Giancana, and, of course, Dr. John Hughes, and together they've written a fascinating book called JFK and Sam, Going into the Assassination of Both Men. And, of course, what most people don't understand is that Sam Giancana was assassinated, and Antoinette was just telling us that for many years, the FBI and the CIA and the local police had cars out in front of Sam Giancana's house. And so they were always there. There were always three cars there. Occasionally one would leave. They'd go for dinner. He'd come back and somebody else would go for dinner. And then another car would leave. But on the evening that Sam Giancana was assassinated, all three cars were pulled away at the same time. Obviously, somebody at a very, very powerful position in government ordered all of those cars to leave so there'd be no witnesses when the assassin went in and killed Sam Giancana, who had been called to testify before a congressional committee. Does that make you rather suspicious, Antoinette, that the hit on your father, the murder of your father, was ordered by somebody in a high position in government?
Yes, that is that has been my thought from the time I started reading and understanding about his assassination. The mob couldn't have ordered all of these people away from the house, could they? No, there was no one that powerful to do that. So it had to come down from one of the highest pieces of our government that they all leave. Now, that person was probably planted in that house earlier. We had an open-door policy. That door was always open. Somebody could have gotten into that house and did get into that house, and just hid. And they, our house where they hid was very possible. I mean, and now very probable that they were hiding.
Of course, your father was down in the basement. He had some sort of a kitchen down there. He was making a very, very special meal for himself. And whoever it was came down down the stairs, snuck up on him, and shot him in the back of the head, and then shot him a number of times after that.
Yes. It was just a horrible thing that happened.
All right.
And I blame our government on that. And, you know, after I'm saying this,
well, of course,
I'm going to have to look over my shoulder. But I don't care. I blame them for my father's assassination. And you know something? As you think back from years, when you play the games that they played, it's a very dangerous game. And I guess the losers in our country was our president, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, not that my father was so great, is just another assassination.
Well, of course,
well,
Dr. Hughes, certainly you've studied this extensively, and you're firmly convinced that people at the highest echelons of our government were involved in the murder of Jack Kennedy, aren't you?
No question about it.
Why did they want to kill Jack Kennedy? I mean, wasn't he going along with their plans?
Well, there were so many different groups that wanted him gone, and one group, of course, was the military-industrial complex, and they were gearing up for a big-time Vietnam War, and then we had the National Security Action Memo 263 that Kennedy put out. He actually put it out in October, the year that he was murdered, but it came to light only a few days before his murder, and it essentially meant that the military-industrial complex was gearing up for war, would have to forget about it because he was going to withdraw troops from Vietnam immediately. So this caused a tremendous amount of consternation in the very large military-industrial complex that, of course, Eisenhower had warned us about. And so, furthermore, we had an important fighter plane called the TFX fighter plane, $6.5 billion back in the 60s.
That was a lot of money back then.
Tremendous amount.
You'd be talking about, you know, equivalent to maybe, what, $30 or $40 billion today.
Yes, it was a tremendous amount of money. And the reason why that was important was that everybody in government knew that that contract was going to go to Boeing, that was considered back in those days the premier organization for development of planes. Also interested, of course, was Grumman and General Dynamics. To make a long story short, General LeMay of the Air Force and the Secretary of the Air Force all indicated that it was going to be Boeing, and it turned out not to be Boeing at the final analysis. It was given to General Dynamics and Grumman. Why? Because Kennedy had decided that it would be better for his reelection, he could put more people to work, more Democrats put to work, if it went to this other organization. Can you imagine how much of the government felt about that, because they were sure that it should have gone to Boeing?
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
Dad?
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Antoinette Ciancana and, of course, Dr. John Hughes. We're talking about the background of the assassination of John Kennedy. We're talking about the assassination of Sam Ciancana. And certainly Antoinette's father had a, certainly he was a very, very powerful man in the country. But he was working with the CIA, and he really thought that the CIA, they were helping him as far as they were covering for him so he could smuggle drugs. Antoinette, was this your impression that, you know, certainly the organization that your dad was involved with was involved with drug smuggling in the country, weren't they?
No, they were not.
Oh, they were not involved?
Absolutely, positively not.
They were not involved with drugs?
No. No.
What were the things? Were they into numbers, gambling, prostitution?
Numbers, gambling. In fact, Dad had several businesses in Cuba. He also developed gambling on the ships going back and forth from the States to Cuba and things like that. Drugs never entered into the picture. You mess around with drugs in Chicago, and, you know, you're going to be dealt with.
What were some of the other branches of the mafia involved with the drugs?
The New York people were mainly.
All right, fine.
New York and also New Orleans.
Okay, fine, but not the division there, the unit then in the Chicago area.
No, not at all.
All right. Well, do you have any idea why he wasn't involved with drugs? Did he think it was wrong, or was he afraid that it was going to create a lot of problems for him?
Number one problem. Number two, he saw the devastation. Some of his friends had family members that got on drugs. How they did it, God only knows. And, you know, he just said absolutely not. He knew of one of the boy's, quote-unquote, son died of an overdose of drugs. And, you know, since that, forget it.
And so he's almost, in many respects, a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and then Mr. Hyde was a very concerned individual then.
Oh, he was extremely concerned with humanity. Doctor, I can't tell you the donations and the contributions this man has made into the Chicagoland area and also in Mexico and also wherever else he traveled. I mean, money was no object to him, and he gave it away.
Well, of course, when he died, what happened to his vast fortune? Because, as you point out in the book, he had relatively little money when he died.
If you want to think of it this way, we were kind of left with practically nothing from the millions of dollars that he controlled. I don't know where they went.
Hold that off right there for a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Edwin Edwards is simply saying that her father, you know, would not have anything to do with drugs with his unit. Now, there were other divisions of the mafia in New York and New Orleans that were into drugs, but Sam would not go into drugs because he felt they were harmful. That he gave a great deal of money away to charitable things on one side, and yet, of course, he was the leading don of the mafia on the other. He had fabulous amounts of money, and yet it seemed all to disappear. In fact, when he died and he left his money to his family, there was relatively little there. Would that be a fair statement?
That's a fair statement. I only got $51,000.
And you had two daughters, was that it?
I had two sisters.
You had two sisters.
That's right. That's correct.
So each one, of course, shared in what was left. So do you think, would you have any idea what happened to all that money?
I have some thoughts that maybe he had given it to somebody to watch for us, and then after his death, they just took and forgot about us. I mean, somebody that could, you know, show for that kind of money. And as I said, I tried getting a couple of psychics involved, and they couldn't even put their hand on it.
I mean, the psychic couldn't figure out where it was.
Where it was. I'd share it with them.
All right, fine. Well, of course, there are lots of strange things that goes on. Well, Dr. Hughes, as you've analyzed, of course, the murder of Sam Giancana, I do think that it's very obvious that somebody had to have a lot of power and influence to actually get the FBI and the CIA and the local police all together to pull their cars out. In other words, all of these cars that had been watching Sam's home for literally years, suddenly they all disappear at the same time as the murderer, as the hitman comes in. So do we have any idea who it was or who financed it? Because somebody with a lot of power wanted to get rid of Sammy Giancana before he testified before the church committee. Is that a fair analysis?
Absolutely right. And I thought a lot about this. It doesn't take a great deal of thought to realize that the Oak Park police are not going to dictate to the CIA and the FBI. Now, we're all going to leave at 5 minutes after 12 or 11:30 or whatever time it was. Of course not. And my nomination would be the CIA or the FBI, but because of the circumstances, it would have been the CIA that would have dictated this. There was a author named Bill Romer that Antoinette knows very well that was part of the FBI and has written about six or seven books about the Chicago mob. And he... he always was talking about the fact that it had to be a mob hit. Well, we know perfectly well that that's ridiculous, and Antoinette has already gone into some of the reasons why we know it is ridiculous that it was a mob hit. First of all,
it wasn't a mob hit.
Pardon?
It was not a mob hit.
Not a mob hit.
Right, okay.
It was a CIA hit, and we feel very strongly about that. And I want to point out one interesting fact, and that is the very, very day that the church committee sent a committee to escort Sam back to Washington, D.C. to testify, that was the very night that Sam was murdered. Now, you know, the coincidence of that is just really almost unbelievable, except to know that it was very properly timed to make sure that Sam did not, in fact, testify in front of the church committee. And I go into the book, and as you know, about the very little information the church committee had already had at that time, namely June 19, 1975, about the relationship of the mafia, and particularly with Sam, and the attempted assassination. So on May 30th, why they knew very little from a support chief, and June 9, Bissell and his colleagues said very little about it, and so now comes Sam, and Sam was going to expose the whole thing, they hoped, and I think the CIA just made sure that he didn't talk, and it's really quite understandable. People have asked me many times, well, why in the world would CIA ever assassinate a guy like Sam Giancana? They forget that they were assassinating heads of state. My golly, they wouldn't have one bit of problem about assassinating a guy in the mafia.
Well, did they actually use the mafia to help with some of these other hits?
Well, you're talking about...
I'm talking about New. I'm talking about Trujillo in the Dominican Republic. I'm talking about Patrice Lumumba, you know, over in, where was that, Nigeria?
That was in the Congo.
Oh, in the Congo, okay.
Yeah. You know, it was very interesting, and I tried to go into this, very interesting that what the CIA did was they specialized in support of the enemy of these people, and that's the way they accomplished the hit on these people. I'm talking about people like Lumumba, Trujillo, Diem, and Schneider. And so it was trying to find out who is the enemy of these people that you want to eradicate, and then you give them all the guns and the support that they need. And this was the way the CIA did it, and therefore they didn't pull the trigger, but they were highly responsible for the murder of these four heads of state.
All
and
right.
So, you know, there's no doubt in our mind that the CIA was responsible for the hit on Sam, and for very good reason. Very good reason that they didn't want him to testify.
All right, fine. And of course, do you think it was because there was any that he had any involvement in the Kennedy assassination, or do you think it was because he may have had had been working with him to have him try to assassinate Castro, or both?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Well, there'd be two things. One was, of course, that there's no question that Sam had been contacted by the CIA to try to kill Fidel Castro, or to make arrangements to have him killed. But do you think it was they wanted to silence him so he wouldn't talk about the murder, attempted murder of Castro, or that they were concerned because of what he might know about the murder of President Kennedy? Or both?
I think probably both, but I would concentrate, Stan, on the fact that this was mostly about Castro, because that was the essence of the church committee. The church committee was there to investigate the assassination of heads of state, and Castro, of course, was the one that they were featuring at that time. So I think that would be the emphasis for the church committee at that time.
All right. Well, let's go back to Antoinette. Antoinette, my understanding is that Sam didn't try very hard to assassinate Castro. Did he ever talk to you at all about his involvement with the CIA on that aspect?
He just laughed and said, well, we're not going to do anything with him. We're collecting all this money, so, you know, while we're collecting it, let's keep collecting it.
In other words, they were paying him to get Castro, and he wasn't about to get Castro, and yet he had every reason to get Castro, because Castro had nationalized some of the casinos and other holdings that he actually had in Cuba, hadn't he?
He had taken everything away from our family.
All right.
And that's the only resentment I have about Fidel Castro. We could have been probably living a lot better.
All right, fine. But wasn't Sam pretty angry with Fidel after that?
Oh, he was just absolutely angry, because he had to leave the minute the man came. As soon as Batista was out, Sam had to leave the country immediately with other people, and some politicians that were down there, too, all left.
Well, of course, were there a lot of people that had a lot of investments, a lot of Americans, operations down there in Cuba? Was Sam associated at all with the President Batista?
I believe they knew each other. I can't see that they would not, because Sam's involvement with the casinos and also the boats that travel between Florida and Cuba.
And, of course, was there gambling on those boats?
Father initiated gambling on those boats because they were outside of the United States waters.
Okay, and so then they'd go back and forth. And so he was making a lot of money then on the transportation, on the boats, and then in the casinos. And then suddenly this Fidel Castro comes to power and seizes everything, and there's no compensation. So I'm sure there were a lot of hard feelings then, weren't there?
There were, and if anybody should have assassinated anyone, my father should have really killed Castro at that time.
But he didn't do it.
He really, no, he did not.
He just took the CIA's money, and I bet they were sort of mad at him for, they take it very, very personally when you take their money and then you don't do the job you're paid for.
Well, I don't think they realized what Sam was doing.
How do you mean what he was doing?
Well, not able to get to Castro.
Did he try, do you think, at all? We heard all sorts of ideas, like an explosive cigar.
A cigar and poison and all of these other means. No, Dad was just playing the government for what he could.
All right. Well, I think that probably they weren't too happy with that. Well, Dr. Hughes, as you analyze the whole background of this situation, certainly, of course, the whole story gets into the assassination of the President of the United States. And it would appear that the oil men who were angry with President Kennedy because he'd taken away the oil depletion allowance.
That's right.
Certainly, Vice President Johnson hated the Kennedys.
Oh, my.
The J. Edgar Hoover hated the Kennedys.
Oh, my.
The CIA hated the Kennedys.
Oh, yeah.
And the military-industrial complex, at least the military hated him. So isn't this a pretty... He had a lot of enemies, didn't he? A lot of people really wanted to get him. And the question is, which one did it, or did they all do it together? What's your impression?
Well, my impression is they all contributed. And, of course, as I mentioned about a half an hour ago, the mob, of course, were the mechanics, namely the shooters. But I think the groups that you just mentioned, Stan, were all collaborating together. They all had their role. They all had their reasons to despise Kennedy. And there was some decent justification for their feelings. Not that there ever is justification for an assassination, but it's really quite understandable. And, you know, I'd like to add one more thing that it fits in sort of to a religious context, and I know that you're concerned about that, as Antoinette and I are too, and that is Father Kennedy, I think, is the bad guy here, because he tried to convince his kids that you can get away with anything. The Kennedys can get away with anything. And so if it hadn't been for that philosophy of Bobby Kennedy and Jack Kennedy, they may not have tried to do these things to other groups and to other people, so that Kennedy may have lived otherwise a long life. A good example, is Bobby Kennedy's role in trying to get rid of Carlos Marcello. It's just unbelievable that he would think that he could get away with picking up a guy off the streets of New Orleans and flying him into Guatemala City and then sending him into the jungles of San Salvador to die, essentially.
But for our listeners who don't know, this was a member of the mafia, and of course they were trying to get him deported. They couldn't do it, and so Bobby Kennedy had who actually picked him up? Somebody from the Justice Department and took him up and left him in the jungle to die. You know, you don't do that to human beings, whether they're members of the mafia or not.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened, and people are shocked when I relate that story. In fact, I was shocked that Bobby Kennedy would go so far as to do that, but remember Father Joe's point, and that is the Kennedys can get away with anything. And when you look even in modern times, you know, we have John Jr. thinking that he, as an inexperienced pilot, could fly at the bad time of night and not very good weather. Oh, I can get away with anything. You see the Kennedy boys going into drugs, they can get away with anything, and even slamming in a skiing accident into a tree and killing themselves. You know, they did believe that they could get away with anything. In particular, Bobby should have known, and I'm sure he did, that his father, Joseph Patrick Kennedy, promised that they would go easy on Sam if Sam got John elected. And yet, after 6 months, he decides to go just terribly after people like Sam. Why did he think he could ever get away with that? Of course not, and he didn't. There are many people that do believe that it was Bobby Kennedy that really set up conditions for John Kennedy's death, because it was Bobby that was the bad guy here that so alienated and made furious the members of the mob in many different ways.
Well, of course, one of the things you talk about in your book is the dinner that was held the night before, and you talk about Madeline Duncan Brown, who was Lyndon Johnson's mistress. Do you believe that story?
Oh, indeed I do. I would be interested, because you apparently have interviewed her, and I have talked to people that knew her. First of all, she did have a son named Sean, I believe, that died in 1996, and Johnson was the father. And I have heard her speak on two occasions about what Johnson said the night before at that famous dinner. And, of course, this is the last night I'm going to be bothered by the G.D. Kennedys. And I think that was probably correct. I have every reason to believe it.
Well, I've talked to her a number of times, and we actually have a four-tape set with my interviews with Madeline Duncan Brown, and I believe that she's telling the truth. I believe that, you know, there was this meeting the night before, because I've talked to people who actually talked to other people who were at the meeting. Galen Ross, who's a friend of ours, had interviewed a number of the people who were still living who were at that meeting that night, when they all agreed that the murder was going to be carried out. Now, I think it had been planned long before that, but they all were being briefed on what was going to happen the following day.
Well, you know, planning of it, there was 6 months ahead of time, the plan. As a matter of fact, there wasn't thoughts of assassinating him in Chicago, and by the way, there was a patsy arranged for there. At the last moment, why Kennedy decided he had a cold and wouldn't come, it was because they were a little bit concerned about what might happen here in Chicago. Then, 3 days before the Dallas trip, Kennedy did go to Florida, and there was a patsy arranged there, and if they had shot him, and that was the time that a man named Miltier indicated, Joseph Miltier, indicated that Kennedy would be assassinated. It would be coming from a rifle in a high building, and of course that proved to be true in Dallas. But even 2 months before that, we had the instance of Sylvia Odio, and that's a complicated story, but essentially 2 months before the assassination, why there was evidence that that the plan was in. And then, of course, we have Rose Sheremy, who was a dancer, and on the 20th of November, that would be 2 days before Kennedy actually was assassinated, she was tossed out of a speeding automobile and went to the hospital to announce that in 2 days Kennedy would be assassinated. So that's some of the evidence, Dan, that all this was planned before.
And of course they can't let the American people know, and they're still publishing all sorts of books to confuse the issue. Now, I like this book very much. I think Dr. Hughes and Antoinette have done an excellent job on this. Why? Because, of course, many of the people that they talk about, I've interviewed Colonel Fletcher Prouty and Madeleine Duncan Brown and certainly some of the other people that they talk about who study this, and there's no question. They killed President Kennedy. They got away with it because they control the media, and they can effectively control what the American people think. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Dr. Hughes, how can people get copies of your book?
Oh, I hope, Stan, they can go to Borders, or they can go to Barnes & Noble, or they can send in, of course, to the regular bookstores, and just ask for JFK and Sam. We're nearly 10,000 copies right now, and if you have any trouble finding one, if you contact me, I'll make sure you get one.
And how would they contact you if they wanted to?
Well, I'd give my address if you like.
If you want to, whatever you'd like to do.
Why don't they get a Cumberland Press?
It's the Cumberland Press has actually published it.
Yeah, Cumberland Press. That, you know, I'm sure that every bookstore in the land will either have a copy or will be glad to get one. And Amazon.com, if you have any difficulty, the listeners out there, why, please just contact Amazon.com and you can get a copy at a reduced price.
All right. Antoinette, certainly you've read the book. What are your thoughts on it?
As I said in the beginning, it's a very significant book in, I think, history. And it just, I was primarily more interested in the Giancana, of course. Part of the history and my knowledge as far as the Kennedys, I remember where I was, I remember how I felt, and things like that, but I think it's a book that has some historical value.
Oh, I think it is. So what about the part that Jack Ruby played? Certainly, was there any relationship that you know between Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald and of course, and the organization?
I defer to Dr. Hughes because I met a lot of these people and I lived with these people that we have mentioned in the book. Never met Jack Ruby, so therefore I could, you know, defer to...
Now, what do you think about Jack Ruby? Certainly, somebody had ordered him to kill Lee Harvey Oswald. There's no question. You don't just walk into a police station where you know you're going to get caught. What are your thoughts on that, Doctor?
Well, there's no doubt about Jack Ruby being a sort of a lower-level mafia type. He was a runner for the mob here in Chicago in 1946, for Al Capone, and then the mob really sent him to Dallas to be a representative of the mob in Dallas. Now, he was not the number one mob guy in Dallas, but he kept a pretty low profile, and there's no doubt about the fact that he knew Lee Harvey Oswald. They had been seen together. In fact, he was very much involved with all of the folks that were prominent players in the assassination in Dallas.
Well, we're going to have to just continue this. Dr. Hughes is going to be our guest on our evening program sometime next week. And Antoinette, I want to thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Dr. Stan, thank you very much. I appreciate your interest in my father.
Oh, well, I appreciate your
being
with
us. You've given him a lot of time, and I certainly appreciate that.
God bless you. And Dr. Hughes, thank you so very much for being with us as well.
Thank you, Stan. It's my pleasure to be with you.
Good night. God bless both.
God bless both of you, too.
Okay, fine. Well, that was, of course, Antoinette Giancana and, of course, Dr. Hughes. I hope you enjoyed the programs. And well, this is, of course, the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you would believe, as I do, that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization, we hope that many of you will join the Radio Liberty family and help us. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to hear my two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the murder of an American president, and Fletcher Prouty believed without any question that the government had murdered him. It was a CIA hit, and it involved the FBI and the CIA and the oil men, and it involved all levels of government. In fact, he, as he points out, it sent the entire cabinet of the federal cabinet out of the country so there'd be nobody here when in case this thing backfired. So, and then, of course, that's we have a four-tape set called JFK Part 1. And then we have a JFK update that has my interview with Madeleine Duncan Brown. In the first one, you're actually going to hear a very unusual interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. You're going to hear an interview with Dr. Crenshaw, who was there at the Parkland Hospital when they brought Kennedy in, President Kennedy in. Dr. Crenshaw was threatened that if he ever told the truth about what he saw, he would never practice medicine. But, of course, the wounds in President Kennedy that you've been told about were not the wounds that he saw. And you'll hear that. It's the only interview with Dr. Crenshaw I know of. He, of course, eventually wrote a book about what he'd seen. 25 years later, he was immediately attacked by the Journal of the American Medical Association. He sued them, and they gave him over almost $250,000 to shut him up. They cannot let the American people know the truth about that, because if they could kill an American president, why, they could kill anybody. They could even stage an attack on the World Trade Center. Is it possible that what you saw on September 11th is not what really happened, and that we've had two committees like the Warren Commission that have been there to cover up the truth, not to reveal the truth, but to conceal it? Well, there's so much that needs to be told, and we can't tell you all, but if you go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, why, you can get the four tape sets on the Kennedy assassination. We even have a Kennedy special with other books. We carry the book Kill Zone. We carry a number of books on this subject. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You can get the items separately, or you can get the Kennedy special. And then, of course, we hope that you will want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, if you haven't read it. We have a wonderful DVD that takes you into the secret societies from which, you know, the intelligence agencies come. It actually goes into the intelligence agencies that existed in the 1500s and the 1600s, which had been infiltrated by occult and secret organizations. We're talking at the time of Elizabethan England. And the DVD is The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And it takes you into the secret societies that were here before the Declaration of Independence was written. Fascinating. One of the best things we have to take you into the background of what's really going on today. Because if you look at what's going on, we attack Afghanistan. And then, of course, we never win the war there. And suddenly, they're growing more opium than ever before. How can that be? We control the country. Why can't we stop them from manufacturing opium there? Doesn't make sense. And then we attack Iraq, and now we're talking about attacking Iran, and they're talking about suicide bombers here in America, and maybe even a nuclear attack on Iran. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got to be concerned, because we're talking about the background for the destruction of America, the blueprint for the destruction of this wonderful country that we inherited from generations past. Go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Please pray for Radio Liberty.